You are listening to Punk News Podcast number 322. Welcome back to the Punk News Podcast. This is Features Editor John Gentile. We got a lot of news this week, a lot of news, and Adam White might not make it to the end of the podcast. We'll find out. So we're just going to blast on through the intros this week, blast on through the mail, and get kicking with the proper news. First of all, Adam White, Managing Editor, how are you feeling this week?
I'm full of hate, John, full of evil, full of black stuff, and...
Hate and snot.
Hate and snot, and, I don't know. Outrage. What else could you be filled with? Whatever it is, it's
piss and vinegar. Isn't that what they say?
Piss, vinegar.
I think
baking piss soda
means you have more like strength to fight. I think Adam has the strength to fight at this point. So
I have the strength to die for our listeners, which is why I'm here.
And speaking of the guy that's always willing to die for our listeners, we are also here with reviews writer Tom Trauma.
I might take a few of them out with me, but yes.
Tom Trauma, what's happening over there?
What's up, guys? Oh, nothing.
All right, well, that's good. Listen, let's get right to it.
Can feel winter's icy fingers down my neck, but other than that, we're good.
You can always reach that podcast at punknews.org. This is from Portland Punk. Here's what Portland Punk has to say. Jesus Christ, listening to John interrupt people and then talk over the rest of the other speaker's sentences is unbearable. And that's from Portland Punk. Not a fan of John. Not a fan.
No one is.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. This is from Jerry with a G. I think Jerry with a G, that means it's a woman or a girl, right? Not a man? Or is that always the case? That's not always the case.
I wouldn't necessarily
say that. Not always the case? Anyways, here's what Jerry with a G has to say. He, she, in between, we're down with whatever. Here we go. I enjoy John, Adam, and Ricky as the new classic crew, but I am a fan of Tom. What do you call Tom, John, and Adam together? And that's from Jerry with a G.
We're like the B team, the top B team.
How about like the Bruiser crew or the Brew crew or the True crew?
I was going to say
TRU.
I was going to say cheap sex, but whatever.
Okay, thank you for the comment. I appreciate that. I don't have quite as many much time as some of these fellows, but I do enjoy when I get to talk to you. Loyal listeners.
Well, I think we should come up with a name for the Adam, John, and Tom unit. We don't have to decide tonight, but I think we should come up with a name. Listeners, if you have an idea, throw it on out there. It has to have some sort of flow to it, you know, like new classic crew. Like
you're not like AJT? AJT?
Yeah, we find our name Adam, John, and Tom offensive to Adam, John's, and Tom. So now you can refer to us as the obtuse AJT from now on.
It's far too cis male with the three of us. We must shorten it so we don't.
What if we gave it a name that was cryptic and weird enough, but awkward enough that no one would want to ask about? Like if we called it like 13 nipples, we're like no one's going to ask like how we're coming up with that number.
True.
Well, I have 7, so if you guys can come up with 6,
do you really have 7 nipples? Is that true? Oh, no. Some people have like 3 or 4. That's true, you know.
In my home, I have like a total of like a
this
dozen.
Is getting way too creepy. Tom, play a song and then.
And most of them are on humans, not just in jars.
Tom, play a song and then we'll come back and clean the air.
All right, we're going to do. Let's do something from the mid of some. Dang. All right, this is a song by a band from Kansas City, Missouri. They're called The Uncouth. They're kind of a street punk band. I just learned of them and I reviewed their 12-inch EP and I love it. It's classic oi street punk kind of stuff, you know, the kind of stuff that I love and our listeners tend to hate. Anyway, this is from the EP Jonesy's War, and the band is called The Uncouth, and the song is called Got Me Wrong.
We'll be right back. you from my town, but no one's ever heard your name. So I'll explain this to you once. You got me wrong, so listen up. You think you're one of us? You'll never earn our trust. Consider yourself warned. When I see you on the street, you'll be picking up your teeth. I don't know who the fuck you think you are. When I see you on the street, you'll be picking up your teeth. I don't know who the fuck you think you are. Doug, next time you see me, you better watch your back. You ask for this, fuck this, just let you suck the fucking match. We don't have to like each other, you should have shown respect. So now I gotta pull your card. So I'll explain this to you once. You got me wrong, so listen up. You think you're one of us? You'll never earn our trust. Consider yourself warned. When I see you on the street, you'll be picking up your teeth. I don't know who the fuck you think you are. When I see you on the street, you'll be picking up your teeth. I don't know who the fuck you think you are.
And that was The Uncouth playing Got Me Wrong off their new EP, Jonesy's War. Punk News bringing you the oi. Let's get right into this week's news. A lot of big news this week. One of the biggest news items this week. The Bad Brains and MC5 are nominees for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. The other possible inductees are Chic, Kraftwerk, Jane's Addiction, Janet Jackson, Electric Light Orchestra, Chaka Khan, Depeche Mode, Joe Tex, Joan Baez, Journey, Pearl Jam, Steppenwolf, The Cars, Zombies, Tupac, and Yes. The Bad Brains being nominated is important for a lot of reasons. They're the first hardcore punk band to be nominated. I'm almost positive they're the first reggae or reggae playing. I don't think Bob Marley's in. First reggae band to be nominated, and I guess Sex Pistols are already in, aren't they? I think The Clash are in, so they're not the first punk band, but they're the first hardcore punk band to be put in, and of course MC5 as well. As always, we have a few issues that involve the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame nominations. First of all, is this even something we should care about? Because the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame is a private organization. It's not like it's the government or it's just a company that decides who's cool enough to be in their clubhouse and who isn't cool enough. And they have a museum that goes along with it. So is there any validity to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame? The Sex Pistols, of course, quite frankly said no. Other bands have quite directly, like Tom Petty said, yes, yes, indeed. Eric Clapton as well. The other thing involved here is, again, we have Tupac being nominated, which is crazy that we're already up to Tupac. To get nominated for Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, it has to be 25 years since your first release has been available publicly. The question is the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame really the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, or is it the Popular Music Hall of Fame? Tom Trauma, what is the Bad Brains being nominated for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame mean to you? And also, what are your picks as to who get it? Every year we try to do our picks. I'm way off every year, but who do you think is going to make it this year? I'll reiterate your options if you'd like me to.
Sure, you better give me the whole horrible list again.
Bad Brains, MC5, Kraftwerk, Chic, Jane's Addiction, Janet Jackson, ELO, Chaka Khan, Depeche Mode, Joe Tex, Joan Baez, Journey, Pearl Jam, Steppenwolf, The Cars, Zombie, Tupac, and Yes. And they usually take about 8, I think.
Well, I can't believe that Steppenwolf isn't already in. How can you have a rock and roll Hall of Fame? 3 songs. The Pusher, Magic Carpet Ride, Born to be Wild. That's 3 songs. But I don't care about any of this crap. Honestly, I mean, I've been to the museum. It's fun. I don't mind going in there and looking around. But the fact of the matter is, I fall on the Sex Pistols camp with this. It's crap. Who cares? The fact that MC5 isn't already in there pretty much tells you everything you need to know about this organization. You know what I mean? How could you not have the MC5 in? How were they not among the like first 2 classes? And also, you know, the Bad Brains thing. I think it would be awesome if MC5 and the Bad Brains both make. But the fact of the matter is, I'm kind of wondering what the deal is with the Bad Brains. I mean, there's far more influential hardcore bands that aren't in.
And oh, I don't know about
that. Bad Brains are very influential. Don't get me wrong, but you think the Bad Brains have been as influential over the years as a Black Flag or a Minor Threat or the Misfits or something like that? I do not. I mean, you could certainly think that, but I do not think that.
Well, I would argue, yes, you are right, in the number of bands that say were influenced by Black Flag is higher than the bands that say were influenced by Bad Brains, but Bad Brains directly influenced both Black Flag and Minor Threat, so it depends on how you look at influence, you know?
They were pretty close. At least Black Flag got started in the late 70s. There certainly wouldn't have been much opportunity for them to influence them. I wonder if there's a kind of...
Don't talk to Henry Rollins.
I wonder if there's a kind of a... Well, Rollins didn't join Black Flag in 1978 either. It wasn't until 1981. But I wonder if there's a little bit of a like political correctness element involved with it. You know, like, let's take the Black hardcore band. I'm just speculating. I have no idea. As far as we know, these decisions are all made by like Illuminati, you know, and I've said this last year, in like a stone basement wearing like Jawa robes with
the decision is made by a committee of people selected by the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, which includes musicians, journalists, music executives and people
I think it is a popular music hall of fame, but man, how do you, I mean, let's face it, Journey's like one of the worst bands ever, but how do you keep them out? I mean, they sold like a billion records. They're like, I don't know. I just, the whole thing stinks to me. If I'm ever in Cleveland, I'll go visit, but it's not legit. And it's certainly nothing any like punk rocker should aspire to.
Well, what are your picks, though? What are your picks? Who do you think is going to make it?
I'm going to go with MC5, Journey. See, Kraftwerk's been in there a couple of years. See, Kraftwerk was very influential, too. We'll go Kraftwerk. And I don't know. That's all I got. I can't remember the list anymore.
Adam White.
This is going to be my overall disposition on tonight's show, but this is bullshit. This,
I think I said that, but yes, I agree.
Yeah, I agree. All right, so the whole structure of this, as the rules for when you were inducted, means that you're going to get diminishing returns from here on out, and I say this really with the same opinion as Tom, in that, you know, I've been to the Rock Hall. I enjoyed my time at the Rock Hall. I think if you're in Cleveland, or even if you're not in Cleveland, it's a place to go because it is a big music museum. And hey, big music museum is a great thing. But the fact that they have this rolling 25-year eligibility period means that they is sort of in a, out there with no one caring, got through the early artists who they had to get through, you know, got through your Elvises and your Beatles and your whatnot, and everyone, and all the stuff everyone assumed would be in. But now that 25 years period has sort of hit the what I would consider modern music era, right? So since it's hit the, at least, you know, the mid 90s, you know, alternative music post Nirvana boom, since it's hit the area when that blew up and hip-hop blew up and everything else blew up, now the picks really have less to do with, you know, what would sequentially make more sense for us to elevate on the family tree of music that has not yet been recognized. And now it's more just a smattering of, you know, of various artists that were popular in various ways throughout that time. And you look at the list from this year, and, you know, I get no sense of history looking at a list that has, like, Journey, Depeche Mode, you know, Steppenwolf, Tupac, and ELO on it. Like, it's, we're all over the place at this point. So it has very little meaning to me. Does it matter whether Journey gets in before, you know, the Cars? Or is it okay if Journey gets in and the Cars don't get in for another 3 or 4 years? Like, if you're looking at musical lineage, it may matter a lot. But if you're just looking at, like, you know, oh, we need to make some press year on year, so here's a bunch of bands to talk about, then it sort of falls into that category. So I really don't, I feel like every year we get this list, and every year the list becomes less interesting to me, because it's no longer, you know, walking up that historical ladder in the way that I felt that it was. And now it's just a bunch of bands. Like, and, you know, do we need to even discuss Pearl Jam as a Rock and Roll Hall of Fame band at this point, when, you know, not to be all punk rock about it, but when like fucking like Minor Threat or Black Flag aren't in here? That just, it's just, for something that's a museum, I would have hoped that the, you know, keeping true to the historical branching of the music scene, and, you know, this important band led to this important band, would be a little bit more respected. And that's not really what's happening here. And I get why, because I get why having like a big, you know, I'm sure that all the bands that get in every year get a big exhibit done about them. So for them to go and to have a giant Pearl Jam exhibit, it is money in the door, because there's a lot of Pearl Jam fans and they'll come in to see the big Pearl Jam exhibit. Like, I get that, but that's a business decision. That's not a, you know, that's not a historical decision. So I don't care about your business decision.
I agree with the guys, man. I do think the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame is fun, and that, you know, we celebrate rock bands, but as we're getting to the point is, you know, 25 years ago, there was more people than there was 50 years ago when the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, well, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, I think, started 25 years ago. So now there's more people than there were 25 years ago, which means now there's more bands than there were 25 years ago. But the number of inductees has remained constant, which means they have to get more selective and they can be less representative of the bands that really should be in, which is a problem. And it's only a problem that's only going to get worse. As the years progress, there's more bands that hypothetically could get in, but they're only putting in 8 each year, so there's going to be a bigger and bigger pool of bands that should be in. And as always, they balance what I would call legacy acts that should be in and bands that they bring in just to get, you know, people out through the door and people interested in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Joe Tex is a legendary musician, but nobody's showing up for Joe Tex. Pearl Jam, a million people will show up to check out Pearl Jam or talk about it or whatever.
Like, in 2015, Green Day got in, okay? Yeah. So, like, again, if I was to go make the history of modern rock museum at some point, yeah, of course, Green Day would be in there at some point. Dookie was an incredibly influential album. It was part of that movement in 95 when everyone, you know, started to break punk rock into the mainstream. Of course, that's important. I don't want to diminish that. But does it, within the context of the year 2015, which is when they were inducted, did it matter that in 2015, Green Day was given that honor? No. Like, there's no, whatever bands get in, it doesn't matter the year that they get in anymore. And I guess that's why it seems a little bit.
And Green Day is like first year ballot. You know what I mean? It's kind of like, I don't know if you guys are baseball fans, but you know, the Baseball Hall of Fame, you'd be on the ballot for only 5 years. And the very best players go in on the first ballot, you know? And if you're like, if you're not quite as good, it'll take a couple years. Green Day went in their first time.
Like, as much as I don't care about, say, like the Grammy Awards, I get why the Grammy Awards would feel more important, because, okay, of the music that was released in the past year, these are the people that we've awarded from that past year. I mean, to, you know, or the thing that I'm involved in up here in Canada, the Polaris Prize, right? Of the bands that are of the releases that came out in the past year, of that selection, these are the ones that we're going to choose to celebrate out of that list. So there's some context to it, and the context matters. But just to say, like, of any fucking rock band that is at least 25 years old, we are going to stick our hand into the bag and grab, you know, the Zombies and Steppenwolf and Depeche Mode. Okay. That doesn't mean shit. So I don't know. I feel that, like, they should just pick some bands and just announce it. And this year, the big exhibit's going to be on Pearl Jam, and I would have no problem with that. The fact that it sounds like there's nominees and there's a competition aspect to it just rings so hollow to me right now.
The other thing is the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame now more than ever is fundamentally flawed. By saying 7 or 8 bands should get in, it means the other bands are not as worthy or as important, or however you want to phrase it. But how do you compare Tupac to the Cars to Zombie? Like it's almost like comparing like a painting to a dance number. Like, they're completely different things. There's no way to compare those two. So to group them all into the same thing doesn't make sense, and it just doesn't make sense. It's fundamentally flawed.
Well, yeah, Tupac's not
How do you compare Johnny Cash to NWA? They're both amazing bands, but how do you say one's better than the other? They do a completely different thing, you know. But then you say, well, okay, we'll just have a Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Well, what's rock and roll? Is reggae rock and roll? Is funk rock and roll? You know, it is fundamentally flawed in that way. That being said, I'm going to make my picks, so write them down. I think here's who's going to get in. I think MC5 will get in as a legacy act. I think Electric Light Orchestra will get in as a legacy act. I think Cars will get in as a popular act. I think Tupac will get in as a popular act. I think Pearl Jam will get in as a popular act. Did I say Kraftwerk already?
No.
I think Kraftwerk and Chic will get in. Kraftwerk will get in as a legacy act. Chic as a popular act. That's my picks.
I could totally buy, and the Cars have been on and nominated a few times. I could totally get the Cars coming in, if for no other reason than Rick Ostenak, is that his name?
Rick Ocasek.
Ostenak. You know, so
Rick Ostenak.
No. The reason I said Ostenak is there is a multi Grammy winning accordion artist, a polka artist that lives right here in Niagara, in St. Catharines, Ontario, named Walter Ostenak. And he's won like a bazillion Grammys for polka because I don't know. I guess there might not be a huge field of polka.
No one else does polka.
Yeah.
I can see animals.
It's like polka, spoken word, and comedy. It's all like one.
Yeah, so okay,
I see Adam Mike walking up. This guy's like, "Yeah, man, would you do my best friend's girl? That's my favorite song by you."
So, anyways, but no, but with like Rick Ocasek was he was influential in it, just in producing a lot of the modern rock acts that had come after and were influenced by bands like the Cars. Like he was involved in a lot of the early Weezer stuff. So, like as far as like again looking at like that family tree and that branching and stuff like that, like that's an important thing to me to say, like, okay, hey, you had the Cars and you had Rick Ocasek, and then from there you had him go on and to work with Weezer and this and that and the other. So like that is what's interesting to me, the fact that, yeah, you know, we're gonna roll the dice and pick the Cars and Tupac instead of like Yes and Chaka Khan. Okay,
well, Yes sucks. trivia time. Adam White and Tom Trauma, what famous hardcore band did Rick Ocasek produce?
Oh, he did Bad Brains.
He did Bad Brains, Rock for Light.
Yeah, and he did a Bad Religion album too, or two.
He kind of sapped the power from Bad Brains. I don't know how you do
well,
it.
Well, yeah, because a lot of those songs were on the first album too, and the takes on the first album were definitely sharp.
Yeah. Okay. Well, speaking of Rock and Roll Hall of Fame kind of guys, rock and roll icon Chuck Berry is going to release an album at age 90. He had just had his 90th birthday last week. And it's going to be his first album in 38 years. It's going to be called Chuck, and it will be out in early 2017. What's kind of neat is his family is basically his band. There's a couple other people that aren't in his family, but have been playing with him for like 40 years. Chuck Berry's a very interesting guy because if you haven't seen it, you've got to see the documentary Hail, Hail, Rock and Roll, in which Keith Richards tries to put together a concert to pay tribute to Chuck Berry, and Chuck Berry is just a complete asshole to Keith Richards the whole time. And like Keith Richards is like, "I'm doing this for you," and Chuck Berry is just so ungrateful. And the idea is because Chuck Berry feels as though he hasn't gotten his due respect. However, I mean, he's super rich, and everyone cites him as an influence.
I don't think he's super rich.
But. Oh, he's rich, and here's why, Tom. Chuck Berry is an incredibly smart businessman, or incredibly lucky businessman. In the 50s, when everyone was selling the rights to their songs for $20 or $50, do you know what Chuck Berry did?
Held on to him? I don't know.
Chuck Berry said, "I'm not selling my songs. I'll license them to you, but I get a royalty, and I get to own them."
Someday someone will want to cover my ding-a-ling, and I'll be raking in the cash.
Well, he is raking in the cash because anytime you hear Johnny B. Goode, either Chuck Berry version or a cover, anytime you hear it, Chuck Berry's getting money, and Johnny B. Goode is all over. And you really have to give Chuck Berry credit for that because he was an African-American man in the 50s who said to white record label owners, "I'm keeping my songs. You can license them if you want, but you're not buying them." And Chuck Berry was smart enough to do that.
The reason I question as well is because, like, even going into the 80s, and you said he's had a long-running band now, but he used to travel in his car with his guitar. If you hired Chuck Berry for a gig,
because he's cheap,
you had to provide the entire backline and his backing band. So there's famous people out there who will tell the story of, like, I think Bruce Springsteen, I'd almost bet money on it, was one of them, where, like, in the late 60s, before he made it as a solo artist, he played in the backup band at some New Jersey show for Chuck Berry. That's how he did. Isn't that awesome?
I love that. That is awesome. Circle Jerks played with him once too, but that's because Chuck Berry often cuts his nose to spite his face.
Well, he didn't want to play a band. He didn't want to split the money with a band, or
right. And you know, maybe if he did, maybe he would have been bigger. You know, but you know, there's always the question with Chuck Berry: is he a rock and roll genius that invented an entire genre? Or is he one of the guys that invented rock and roll, and he had a couple of cool songs that he held on to? Meanwhile, other guys like Little Richard, like Jerry Lee Lewis, like Elvis, don't get the credit they should for inventing rock and roll. Adam White, do you have a position?
I don't know if I can, if I want to say he gets too much or too little credit. I mean, like, on the one hand, he, Johnny B. Goode is on the Voyager gold record, right? Like, it's careening through space right now for our future conquerors to find and use as, the anthem when they come back and enslave us, I guess.
We're getting whipped by aliens, and it's like down in the doo-doo-doo-doo-doo.
Yeah, pretty much. They're like, you know, we thought we would make this a more pleasant experience for you by playing your national song as we, you know, make you mine acid.
Could be worse. It could be like Even Flow by Pearl Jam. I'd rather die listening to Chuck Berry.
To be honest, so John, whatever question you asked, I'm in too much of a fugue state to actually answer it. But sure, that's my answer is sure. Is it really bad that I didn't at first realize that Chuck Berry was still alive when we published this story?
Well, actually, Chuck Berry's kind of cool in that he does like a concert like once a month at the restaurant he owns, and he doesn't sing anymore. So I don't know if he's going to sing on the record or not. But he's been playing music nonstop since 1955. And the other question is, should Chuck Berry be forever chained to his wee wee crimes, or does he get a pass on that when discussing the legacy of Chuck Berry?
I give him credit for influencing Gigi Allen and others with scat fetishes that would follow.
I want to say that he doesn't necessarily get a pass for it, but it's far back in history enough that we can contextualize it by looking at it and saying like, well, that's a fucked up part of this person's story.
I think it went on into like the 90s, John or Adam. I mean, we're talking like he was 70.
Okay. Regardless, we can still look at his story and say, this was a weird part of this person's story, and just kind of hold that in one hand and hold his music in the other hand and go, huh?
Chuck Berry is a creepy old man that the Sex Pistols stole all the riffs from. Yay.
Yeah, well, like, we can do the same thing with Bad Brains and the homophobia thing, right? So we can hold Bad Brains in one hand, hold, you know, all the controversy in the other, look at the two of them together and go, okay, and then, you know, and then we move on with our lives. I don't know, I'm not a fan of burying all the weird shit that some of these musicians have done or been a part of. I'm also not a fan of, like, you know, blacklisting them like fucking Trotsky because of these things. So, you know, you got to acknowledge that weird shit's there
I will say, with artists, for whatever reason, it seems to me that the greater the artist and the more genius the artist is, the more weird they are. And I think that's just an element of how humans are put together. Like, when you get to like next level stuff, you're just a weird person, because the only way to be that hyper genius is to be a weird person, with some exceptions, of course. And so I think you just have to say, yes, Chuck Berry did wee wee crimes, but you still have to recognize the genius of his music and the importance that he did to music. And so no one's perfect, and it's just a part of the greater whole, if you will.
To me, that's just a part of the story. Like, and you're perfectly allowed to look at that part of the story and go like, that's not cool. And just let that float just as like, okay, you know, we all acknowledge that is pretty fucked up, but then, you know, we just acknowledge it. You don't have to use it to make like a grand pronouncement or anything like that. I think everyone acknowledges that, you know, some of the things that Chuck Berry has been accused of or has been found guilty of, the videotapes and everything in particular are pretty fucked up.
I just like saying wee wee crimes. I think that it's in my brain. There's like a wee wee crime. Like if you do a certain, you go to a special court that only handles wee wee offenses. And they go like wee wee judge. Anyway, let's talk about something. See, not me,
John. You're the lawyer.
Any,
so.
I've been working for any opportunity to work scat into a conversation.
I don't know if he had doo doo crimes. I think he just had wee wee crimes.
There was some pretty legendary stories, but we won't get into that. This is a family show.
Biddly bop bop. Okay, so I don't know. What are we gonna? We're gonna move on here. We're gonna keep talking about what Chuck Berry's been filming in the bathroom.
Let's talk
about
some other criminals.
Okay. Well, this isn't really a criminal thing. This is a follow up on something that we talked about last week, and I just wanted to just put the link out there again because it's for a good cause. A band from Kitchener, Ontario, called Wayfarer, that have always been very nice to me and play a lot of shows around here. They have a new EP out. It's 5 songs. It's called Three Winters. You can go grab it on Bandcamp and pay whatever you want for it. But you might want to pay something more than zero, because some of the proceeds from this album are going to go towards a family in Syria. Husband and wife, where they have 4 young children, and they are currently living in one of those massive refugee camps that's in Jordan. And they are trying to come over to Canada, coming to Hamilton, Ontario, where they already have other members of their extended family that they want to like reunite with and, you know, not live in either war-torn Syria or a refugee camp. So they're raising money for that with this EP. So you should go check it out or throw them some money or, you know. So, yeah, there you go. You should do that. Snide Donald Trump refugee comment. Done.
Well, speaking of people battling against Donald Trump, Les Tigres have released their first new song in, I don't know, 10 years, 15 years, a long time. The track is a one-off single. It's not going to be part of a greater reunion or anything. It's part of the Filmmakers for Hillary project, wherein a coalition of creatives committed to electing Hillary Clinton as president of the United States get together and make stuff. The video was produced by Laura Parnes and Tanya Selvarantin. And the video is called I'm With Her, and it's Les Tigres basically saying how much they like Hillary Clinton and how much they don't like Donald Trump. A lot of people were getting very excited about this before the release because Les Tigres got a pretty big fan base. Of course, Kathleen Hanna is a member of Les Tigres. However, upon release, very polarized reaction. Some people said it was a horrible song. Some people said it was a pretty good song. I thought it was not, I mean, honestly, I thought it was a pretty good Les Tigres song. I found it was interesting in that there's no, it's very direct. There's no, I guess what you would say, art or artifice to it. They're basically saying, they're literally saying, we like Hillary Clinton, we hate Donald Trump. So it's almost like not even a pop song. It's almost more like a type of song you would hear in like medieval England or maybe even like the early 1900s, where they're directly telling a story without any detail, or not detail, any, I guess, creativity or any artifice around it, if you will. They're saying, this is what I think, this is more about conveying information than it is telling a story. I find it interesting from that perspective. As for the song, I don't think it's really going to convert anybody that hasn't already been converted. Tom Trauma, what did you think of the jam?
I thought the song was horrible. I mean, it was. If it was a Saturday Night Live skit, it wouldn't have been good. The message, you know, I've already said that. I think these musicians are foolish when they take these positions to support these people that will undoubtedly let them down later down the line. I'm no fan of hers. I'm no fan of his either. I just thought it was terrible. I didn't like the song. I didn't like the message. I thought it was really bad. But yeah, whatever, you know, free country, do what you want to do. You weren't expecting that response.
No, that makes sense. I mean, I'm always curious about the longevity of the protest music that comes out around any of these kind of given political events that we have, and sometimes it works. Sometimes it works. It works well, and the music.
But the song has to be good.
Yeah, like that's the thing. It's like sometimes the music is abstract enough that you can take it. And even if it's not directly in context, that it's still kind of a good song. It's still a good jam. And sometimes, even if it's not particularly abstract, the song rips so hard that you can't, you know, you just, that just becomes part of the story. I mean, so many of those early Dead Kennedy songs are directly about this or that political thing that's happening, they're awesome. Yeah. So you don't have a problem listening to them. But then there's songs that were on I'm thinking back to like the Fat Rack Rock Against Bush compilations that came out. And there were songs on there that where you definitely listen to them and think that like this band just kind of threw a B-side at this compilation and it's not like particularly
change the words a little bit to make it a little
they've either done that or it's just some B-side that is abstract enough that like it could be about the election. But those songs are usually okay after the fact because they're just songs. Like there was on one of the two Rock Against Bush comps, there was a Sleater-Kinney track that was on there from like the Woods era or from, it might've been from the One Beat era, but and just like, it sounded like a decent Sleater-Kinney song. There was no particular overt message in it. So it didn't sound dated. If you were to go to listen to it now, but there were definitely songs on there that, you know, some guy sat down with a guitar and was like, I'm going to write a song about, you know, George W. Bush. And you listen to it now and you're like, in retrospect, I don't really need that in my day-to-day mix of songs at this point. This one has a kind of a tough go at it because like La Tigra is sort of like weird and angular and like repetitively, I don't want to say electronic, but like electronic-y at times. And that's, at least among the punk rock audience, like that's something that's a hard sell in the first place. But then this particular song is just, it's not really that good. It's like almost 5 minutes long. It really doesn't go anywhere. There's not a whole ton of aggression in it. And I think La Tigra is a little bit more interesting when they're being a little bit more aggressive, like the song we played from them a couple weeks ago. And, they're not really saying much outside of like John said, like basically saying right on the nose, you know, we like Hillary more than Trump, which I think a lot of us do, but it's not, I don't know. It's. I don't need to hear it against 5 minutes of music.
Well, speaking of 5 minutes of music, Adam White, play a song.
Oh, okay. You didn't have an opinion on this, John.
I did have an opinion. I thought my opinion was quite clear, and that I thought the song was okay. I don't think it's as bad as everyone says it was. I mean, I think it sounds kind of like the first Late Tigre record.
Sorry. I thought your opinion was Make America Great Again. All right. So what we'll, I'm, as everyone knows at this point, stuffed up and full of garbage. So the only thing that I can do to get through this is to listen to loud, scuzzy music that reflects the inner scuzz of my sinus cavities. So with that in mind, this is a song from 2004, I think, by Planes Mistaken for Stars called Belly Full of Hell from their LP Up in Them Guts. The Planes just had a new record come out. It's quite cool. It's called Prey. But this is not from that. You should go listen to that anyways. But this is Belly Full of Hell, and it's angry and distorted, and it's how I feel right now.
and that was Planes Mistaken for Stars. A very long name, a very obtuse name, a name that you could apply to a lot of different situations. For example, is Tom Trauma a plane that I've mistaken for a star? Who's to say? But speaking of stars, the Pink Fairies have announced a new album. It's their first album in, depending on how you count, 10 years, 20 years, or 30 years, depending on how you look at the band. Tom Trauma, do you know who the Pink Fairies are?
I do know who they are.
Oh, you do? Okay.
But well, they're one of those bands I've never, they're on my radar, but I never dug into them. You know, I'm a big proto-punk fan in general, and I try to know my history in general, but I haven't had a chance to really dig into them.
Well, here is your short 3-minute history on the Pink Fairies.
Oh, famous
the Pink,
last words.
The Pink Fairies started out as a group called The Fairies, fronted by a guy called Twink. The Fairies was a band that was kind of being groomed to be the next Rolling Stones by Abco Records. They never made it. After the Fairies broke up, there was a band called The Deviants. The Deviants was the main guy called Mick Farren and a couple of other guys. Mick Farren was an extremely great artist, but a very far out guy that did a lot of acid and eventually became an acid casualty. After the third Deviants record, basically Mick Farren's band hated him so much that they kicked him out of his own band. And then they went on to record an album with Twink. The remainder of the guys called Twink recorded an album called Think Pink, which is a proto Pink Fairies record. But Mick Farren's also on that record too. After Twink recorded Think Pink, he got together with the other Pink Fairies and put out the first Pink Fairies album called Neverland. Fantastic record, has the song called Do It, which of course the Rollins Band covered. It's certainly proto-punk, it's psychedelic, but it's very proto-punk, very aggressive, very dark, very scary. I was going to say something about that record, but after that, then Twink left the band, leaving the remainder of the Pink Fairies. The rest of the Pink Fairies go on to record two more albums, both excellent albums, kind of different than the first. Then they break up. Then between then and now, there's a whole bunch of different incarnations of the Pink Fairies, some with Twink, some without Twink, some with Mick Farren. I think what's generally considered the next Pink Fairies record is 1985's Kill 'Em and Eat 'Em, because it has Twink and Mick Farren on it. Not a great record, too, unfortunately. Some people might know that Tom Trauma, do you know who the Pink Fairies backed on his first album?
No.
Are you there, Tom?
Oh, sorry, dude. I killed my mic. Oh, I do not know.
Motorhead's first album, you could argue, is actually more of a Pink Fairies album than it is a Motorhead. It's Lemmy and the Pink Fairies doing an album.
You mean On Parole? Like the very first Motorhead album?
I always get confused because, you know, the very first Motorhead album was actually, like, released, like, third in line. Like, they didn't release it.
Yeah, it's called On Parole.
That's the Pink Fairies.
Yeah, and it wasn't quite as edgy sounding as what became the self-titled debut. It had some of the same songs.
Okay. That's the Pink Fairies.
Yeah, Lemmy fired his band after that album. And
that's the Pink Fairies.
Replaced it with the first classic.
The Pink Fairies would hang out with Motorhead, Hawkwind, Pink Floyd to some degree, John Lennon to some degree, all those bands kind of hung out together. Well, now the Pink Fairies are back together with the main Pink Fairies, I guess you could say, Andy Calhoun, Russell Hunter, Sandy Sanderson, and two newish people, George Butler and Jackie Windmill. The new album is going to be called Naked Radio. Not a great title. It's out January 27. They released a new video for the title track. I watched this video. Let me tell you, people, they're looking old. They're looking real old. But man,
It was a lot easier to listen to than it was to look at, wasn't it?
This song kind of rocks, doesn't it?
All right.
Oh, I thought the song was fantastic.
It was the best song we had to listen to this week, certainly.
Well, that's something.
But looking at them, yeah, it was brutal, man.
Yeah. Well, I mean, listen, they're like 75, you know. But I mean, but I thought it sounded like classic Pink Fairies, psychedelic, dark. Yeah. Heavy. I recommend the Pink Fairies. I'm actually kind of excited for this record. Adam Moy, I don't know. Did you check this out?
I did. It's cool. I like the song. Tom is completely right in that these guys look like they're 900 years old.
I mean, I'm not trying to be a dick. I know they're old, but man, it was hard to look at.
They've all done a lot of acid, that's for sure. I mean,
they rock harder than my grandparents, but you know, cool.
Well, anyway, that's the Pink Fairies, and I'm excited. This kind of came out of the blue, so I'm looking forward to this. Here's something else that I think no one's looking forward to. Joe Corey, son of Malcolm McLaren, Sex Pistols manager, and Vivian Westwood, famous British-English fashion designer, probably one of the most fashion designers ever to exist, to tell you the truth. About 6 months ago, Joe Corey said, "I'm going to burn all my dad's punk memorabilia. It's worth about $6 million. I'm going to light it on fire because punk rock doesn't mean anything. And the fact that the Queen is supporting the Punk London movement, which is a thing run by the English government as sort of a archival history of punk rock. He said because the England is, I guess, officializing punk rock or making it official, I'm going to torch all 6 million of my dad's stuff, which includes Rare Sex Pistols records, a Sid Vicious doll, and some other neat stuff. That put a lot of people the wrong way. A lot of people said, well, the more punk thing to do would be to sell it and give that money to charity or do some good with that money. Johnny Rotten himself said as such. However, it turns out that not only is Joe Corey going to burn all this stuff, he's actually going to film a documentary for the 20 days leading up to it, or 40 days. For a couple of weeks, he's going to be filming a documentary.
40 days, John. It's 40, symbolic, 40 days. Man. It's biblical. 40 days.
There you go.
Just like when it rained.
Well, listen, I said it before. I'm saying it again. This is stupid. This is it really is quite indulgent to destroy something that could literally save hundreds of people's lives if you were to sell it. And also, it's an important piece of history that we should protect. You don't get any more history. Once history is gone, it's gone. I think this is Joe Corey trying to be the provocateur that his dad was. However, he doesn't have the skill or the style. Even though Malcolm McLaren was pretty much a snake oil salesman, he knew how to get people to pay attention to him, and that's how he made tons of money. He did it with the Sex Pistols. He did it with Bow Wow Wow by having a 14-year-old girl naked on the cover. He did it with Buffalo Gals by taking African-American culture and incorporating it into an English context. He, to a degree, he did it early on with the New York Dolls, although they say he didn't do all that much. And he did it time and time again. Malcolm McLaren knew how to make people pay attention to him and knew how to make people give him money. Joe Corey, I think he's trying to do that, but he just doesn't have the skill. And as Adam White said, Joe Corey, who was never really part of the punk rock movement, doesn't get to decide what punk rock is. So I give two thumbs down for Joe Corey. Not only is it a dumb move, but he's trying to be his dad and he's failing horribly.
What's driving me nuts about this, and I voiced extensively on this podcast how much of a dumb twit I think this guy is, but like, is there a better way to flaunt your wealth and privilege than to destroy millions of dollars worth of something in a way that will have no personal ill effect on you? Like, this guy's not going to go just, you know, he's not setting fire to all this stuff and then he's going to go live in a box in an alley somewhere. He's a rich guy that has a successful business that makes money, and he has more than, you know, more money than what he's burning, you know, sitting in the bank. So it's just, you know, it's just him going, hey, look, I'm a big rich guy. I'm going to go wreck stuff that doesn't matter to me because, you know, money is no object. Whee! That's what he's doing. I really don't see why anyone should care.
Are we all dupes that he's going to pull out at the last minute and say, aha, I got you?
I mean, we might be duped if anyone was going to pay attention to whatever is going on with this 40 days thing. Or I don't think there's any suspense involved in this. Like, no one gives a shit what this guy is going to go wreck for whatever dumb reason he's going to go wreck it. So the fact that he's got the 40 days leading up to the burning thing is sort of bewildering to me, because like, I don't know what that's supposed to signify or what sort of stunt that they're planning to pull day in and day out as they lead up to this destruction of stuff.
Here's a movie. Here's the pile of stuff we're going to burn. One day later, here's the pile of stuff we're going to burn. But yeah, it's definitely... Like, he's trying to, but the 40 days is a number chosen to make it seem epic. I mean, 30 days is like a common, you know, common thing that you would measure time by. 40 days is like I said, has biblical overtone.
Sure, and I mean, you can have an epic build up to something if what you're building up to is epic. The problem is that he's not burning up to anything epic. He's building up to like, hey, I have the wealth and privilege by which I can destroy all this shit. Look at me go. Like, that's not endearing anyone to him. No one's going to go, ooh, Joel Corey is so daring for wrecking a bunch of stuff that he happened to own.
I called dibs on that 7-inch pressed by A&M, and I called dibs on the Sid Vicious doll. I am so curious what that is. I bet it's just like a really cheaply thrown together, like Ken doll, but like with punk clothes on.
I think that'd be pretty cool, honestly.
Are you going to throw yourself into the pyre to get it out?
Exactly. Here's what we do. Let's do the mega punk thing. Is right when they're about to burn it, we'll go jump everybody and steal everything. That's punk rock. Let's do it, boys.
I can come up with, like, I'm pretty sure we can sit here.
The rock and roll swindle.
We can sit here and spitball, like, 20 different ways that we more punk that he could go about this. That he could go about this. See, like,
just
you know
the
what?
Fact that you guys are so passionate about it makes me think that he's doing the most punk thing you can do.
No, because I only hear about him when we post a fucking article about
it. He can help
it.
The poor. That's not punk, dude.
No, you know what?
Just direct things for no reason. Kill your heroes. Burn it down. We had this exact same conversation.
I know, but here you go. Here you go. I have the perfect solution to this. If he wanted to make a statement where he's thumbing his nose at the queen or whatever, and make a statement using all this stuff that he's got, that he can do whatever he wants with, burn it or whatever. If he wants to make that statement, but he doesn't want to fulfill this this like super altruistic like punks is social crusaders thing and like donate all the money to charity. So let's say he doesn't want to do that, right? What I would do is just with no buildup, make a big pile of all this stuff, like shipping containers worth of it, bring it out in the middle of the night into like the busiest like street corner in London and just dump truck dump it on the street and leave. Eventually it's going to come back to you that, you know, holy fuck, $6 million worth of Sex Pistols shit all of a sudden appeared in the gutter. It's going to come back to you that was your doing, right? That was your shit, that was your memorabilia, because clearly he was the owner of this stuff because it's all connected to his dad. But then in that case, he's done something out of the blue with it that wasn't like self-aggrandizing in the lead up to it. He still in a way like symbolically discarded all that stuff, and it looks to me more punk because he's saying, I don't even care what happens to all this stuff here. Yeah, it's in the garbage.
He's obviously self-promoting. He's a master of self-promotion,
right? Well, but to me, like, it's not self-promoting. Like, if he's trying to really like to be as dismissive as possible about this stuff, then be dismissive of it without all the buildup. Like, make it a big shocking thing. Fuck, maybe he could have just burned all this stuff, or like, go put it on the street and burn it and then explain what you've done. Don't lead up to it like this. Like, the lead up to this dumb destruction is not helping his cause. It's just making him look like an attention whore.
Well, isn't that what Malcolm McLaren was?
Absolutely.
You know what I mean?
Sure, but is he trying to make a statement about, like, you know, is he trying to go, punk rock should be more nihilistic and less, you know, less approved by the powers that be? Or is he trying to make the statement of, I'm a big attention whore like my dad?
Well, I think it's the latter.
Well,
I think Malcolm McLaren quite directly would say the point of punk rock is to scam people. I think that's what Malcolm McLaren would say. Maybe
that will happen.
Is that Malcolm McLaren's the point of punk rock? And he said as much in the Great Rock and Roll Swindle, which of course is not factual. Is the reason Malcolm McLaren takes that stance because he looked at what he had 3 or 4 years after the fact and had to justify and explain what he did to some degree and try to make himself seem like he was in control of what happened, when he really was not in control of anything? That's what I think the truth is.
All I know is that I can't picture Malcolm McLaren without thinking about how he was visualized in The Filth and the Fury. So all I picture is that, like, you know, whenever they cut to a quote from Malcolm McLaren in there, it was just like a bondage mask. They were just like pumping up with air.
The annoying thing is you can't hear what he's saying hardly, you know? I always imagine Malcolm McLaren with the hat as later worn by Pharrell on Buffalo Gals, that big Crocodile Dundee hat or whatever. Listen, speaking of true punk rockers, and I mean that non-ironically, I mean that quite seriously, Descadena and Ron Reyes of Black Flag are teaming up to do some shows. We're going to do a bunch of Black Flag songs and maybe some other songs too. CJ Ramone is opening. It's going to be two shows, one in Brooklyn, one in New Jersey. This is important in case maybe you don't realize, is about 3 years ago, there was the huge battle between Flag, which was Keith Morris, Descadena, Chuck Dukowski, Bill Stevenson and Steven Egerton on one side on Flag, and Black Flag on the other side, which was Greg Ginn, Ron Reyes, and some other schmucks.
Well, Ron Reyes never took a hard stand against Flag.
Exactly. Actually, Ron Reyes, thanks to Punk News, took the exact opposite. Before the whole thing went down, a certain Punk News journalist interviewed Ron Reyes and said, do you have a beef with Flag? And
he
said,
our very own Malcolm McLaurin.
Yeah, our very own Malcolm McLaurin. He said, do you have a beef with Flag? And he said, not at all. I love those guys. They're doing their thing and we're doing our thing and it'll be cool. And then, of course, Greg Ginn, of course, started the war and quite directly lost. So this is important because we have the two opposing sides, even though the two members of the opposing sides were never at battle with each other, coming together to do a Black Flag show. And I'm excited for this, and I think this is going to be cool, and I'm probably going to make it up there.
I thought Ron Reyes retired. I thought that was actually a story we did a few years, months ago, actually. Maybe earlier in the year. I don't
know. He did, but I think it didn't stick. You know what I mean? Like I think Ron Reyes, and I don't mean to speak for him, and I don't know this, but this is my perception. He took the criticism, the Black Flag, very hard.
He had a bad taste in his mouth.
Because he was looking forward to it. He was excited to do it. It didn't turn out nearly as good as he was hoping it would turn out when it could have been. And meanwhile, Flag was killing it. Everyone's like, Flag is great and Black Flag is terrible. And it's not his fault that it was bad. Ron Reyes was by far the best thing. The reason it was so bad was because of Greg Ginn and the other two schmucks. And also the cover art, which he got ambushed into doing, people were just vicious and hateful and mean with that. So I think he got so burnt out on music. Just one day he said, I'm not doing it anymore. Why am I torturing myself? Why am I punishing myself? I'm just not going to do it anymore. But I think after he took weeks, literally, to recover, he said, bit by bit, he's doing music again because he truly loves doing it. That's my take. I don't know if that's the truth, but that's my guess.
I think that's a fair guess. I mean, I don't know either, obviously, but I think that, yeah, he might have just been burned out with the whole thing and need a little break. And as far as this show goes, if it was near me, I would totally go. I go to all the old man punk rock shows anyway, but I think that would be great fun. I mean, I don't know how good it will be, but I think it'd be great fun.
You know what? I feel really good for that Reyes is kind of like back and playing music with some of the other guys. If for no other reason than like, if you look up some of the articles about when Ron was kicked out of the 2013, 2014 version of Black Flag, he was pretty despondent after that. Like there's an LA Times article where he talks about you know what the shows were like, and that, you know, he was really the only old school Black Flag singer that was willing to go be in that band at that time. And this was kind of before he had, I guess, had any sort of any reconciliation with the guys in Flag. But he basically speaks, like, there was a line here where he says, you know, there was the good Flag and the evil Flag. It was really hard. When I started, I was on good terms with those guys, and all of a sudden they stopped responding to my emails. Relations were severed, and I was guilty by association. So he was pretty fucking bummed out for a little while, having been, you know, booted from the modern day Greg Ginn Black Flag, and at the same time not yet you know, made good with the guys in Flag. Like, it sucks for him. So, yeah, but hey, it seems like they're better now, so that's cool.
I'm glad it's coming back around for Ron, because Ron's, from my perspective, I've interviewed him twice, I think. Ron's a nice guy, so I'm glad things are going better for him, you know? Do you guys, we've got a picture here on the website, Tom and Adam, do you guys get the importance of this picture as specifically to this article?
Let me look at it. I don't remember.
It's not in front of me right now. Hold on.
Here we go. Let's see.
And I encourage the listeners to go to Punk News and Google in Dez Kadena and Ron Reyes, the team up, and you'll see a very famous Black Flag picture. I'll give you guys a hint. It's from the Pollywood Park show.
All right. Give the people what this is about, John.
Okay. So in the picture, there's a singer to the right. There's a guy on his knees, like kind of in the middle, and there's a guy on his knees to the left. And the two guys are fighting for, I think, a sandwich or, you know, a can of beer. The guy on the far right, do you guys know who's singing right there?
Keith Morris? Young Keith Morris?
That's young Keith Morris, yeah. pre-dreadlocks. The guy in the lighter color jeans is Dez Kadena, and the guy in the darker color jeans is Ron Reyes, before they were singers for Black Flag. Nice. And so it's kind of like, what's what I'm looking for? Not biblical, but...
Like premonition. Like a,
Yeah. And that it's the two singers that would be part of Black Flag fighting over beer. I mean, they were friends. So they weren't like fighting, but... quote, fighting over beer while Black Flag is performing one of its most famous early gigs, and now they're getting back together to do a show together. I think that's pretty neat.
Also interesting, Henry Rollins was actually working at a Baskin Robbins in Washington, D.C. while that show was going on, so that's why he's not there.
Very true. So listen, let's wrap up tonight's podcast with something that's, I wouldn't say it's punk, but it's something the punk community has embraced. It's certainly the Clash embraced, and I think this is really neat. Max Romeo, famous reggae singer, has released a video off his recent album called Horror Zone. The Horror Zone album is important within the chronology of Max Romeo because it was produced by a guy called Daniel Boyle. Daniel Boyle is a guy that's a huge fan of Lee Scratch Perry. What Daniel Boyle did is he assembled the type of equipment that was used in Lee Scratch Perry's Black Ark recording studios and recorded a Black Ark style album with Max Romeo, because Max Romeo's most famous album, of course, is War in Babylon, very influential towards the Clash, and is considered one of the greatest reggae records of all time. But however, Max Romeo didn't record another album with Lee Perry after that, much to many reggae fans' chagrins. So what Daniel Boyle did was made a Black Ark style studio and recorded an album with Max Romeo in the Black Ark style, and it sounds pretty close to a Black Ark style record, which is heavy, trippy, massive and sort of psychedelic sounding. So they released a claymation video for the song Give Thanks to Jehovah, and Lee Scratch Perry does a little bit of post-production on the song. I think the song is okay. I think this video might be the neatest music video I've ever seen, or if not the neatest, one of the neatest. I just love claymation, and I love how it's got Lee Scratch Perry flying around on a magic carpet, and he has the Black Ark in his hat, and he makes it appear. I just think it's such a neat video. Adam White, what'd you think?
It is a neat video. The claymation reminds me of like cartoons I would have watched in the 80s for some reason. It is not the most epic video you've ever seen, because there is that fucking video with the space zombies that we watched a week ago.
High on Fire. I agree. Second most epic.
Yeah. True. Have some respect
for High on Fire.
But yeah, this is neat. You know, the funny thing is that, like, I listen to this and I like this a lot. I like the sound of it. I mean, this is, I feel that a lot of my ska fandom in my youth has sort of evolved more towards stuff like this. But I always have a little bit of pause when I'm listening to something like this, because I really ask myself, like, if I was listening to a punk band or like an indie rock band or anything that had the lyrical content of this song, I would totally not listen to it, because I've been like, woof, religious band, no way, right? But for some reason, like, I
kind of the repetitiveness of it too, I think.
Well, yeah, but then I can listen to, I can listen to like a reggae guy, you know, basically sing about religion in a completely fawning non-questioning way, and I have no problem with it. But if I were to listen to a rock band do that, it would seem like someone's trying to sell me something, and I don't know why that is.
I know why that is, Adam White.
Contact buzz, secondhand smoke, dude.
No, I know why. Adam White, do you like Johnny Cash?
I like Johnny Cash.
Johnny Cash has a lot of religious songs, and and I've thought about this a great deal. The reason is, when Max Romeo, when Johnny Cash sings religious stuff, you can tell deep down this means something to them, and they feel very greatly moved by these words or this concept, and it's very genuine. When you listen to bland Christian rock, you can tell they're just repeating something, not because they believe it, but because they're trying to convince themselves, and there's no real independent thought involved. You can tell with Johnny Cash and Max Romeo and the other... Right. Well, not. I mean, you can tell they thought about this for a long time, and they say, "Yes, this is what's meaningful to me." Whereas in Christian rock and that kind of stuff, they're just reiterating things they've heard already in a non-interesting, non-artistic form. That's my thesis.
See, I don't know if I buy that completely.
Really?
Well, just because, like, I don't want to question like someone's sincerity just because they're a rock band, right? Like I could totally get that. There's probably some people that are in a rock band that are totally buy in to their. You know, if the example we're going to talk about is Christianity, like, it would totally buy into their Christian thing. Like, there's got to be some, like, I don't know, they're out there in the world. There is a Seventh Day Adventist rock band that totally believes their shit. And on the one hand, like, all the power to them, I guess. But on the other hand, like, there's no way that I could bring myself to listen to it. But I can listen to Max Romeo sing about Jehovah, and I'm fine. I don't know why. I'm not even saying it's a justifiable standard that I have or anything like that. But it always gives me pause.
If a band was good enough, I wouldn't care if they sang about Seventh Day Adventist stuff. Well, the fact of the matter is, you know, I really try to judge a band whether or not they're good or bad, not so much their content. I suppose it would be a little hard to get into something if everything they were singing about was totally foreign or opposed to what you believe. This song, I thought the song was okay. I mean, I like the song. I didn't dislike it. The video was off. You bastards sort of stole my thing. Good song, great video.
I love Claymation Lee Scratch Perry almost as much as I love Lee Perry. I mean, I thought if you flying around in a magic carpet in outer space.
That, like, weird Bigfoot thing? What was up with that, man?
That's Super 8. That's a reference to one of Lee Scratch Perry's most important albums. That guy's on the cover. That's Super 8. The idea is that's like the most natural man, and that's it's a whole thing. That's Super Ape. So
yeah, excellent,
man. Nice. But I love Lee Scratch. I love Lee Scratch Perry on a magic carpet. He's 80, you know. He's 80, and he's playing around on magic carpets.
He should produce the new Pink Fairies album if he's 80.
He might be too young for that. So listen, that's Lee Scratch Perry. I think you should check out the album and definitely check out the video. Let's wrap up a song. We just had some pro-God music, so let's have some non-pro-God music. It's the Halloween season. The Halloween season is here. As you might know, Samhain, or Shawane, is the band between Misfits and Danzig. Tom, you think everybody knows that or not everybody knows that?
I think most people know that. Mm. Who are into those bands. But I think the Misfits have a lot of like superficial fans, more so than Danzig, who don't really know the history of the band.
So when I'm listening to the Misfits are my favorite Danzig band. When I'm listening to Samhain's my favorite Danzig band. When I'm listening to Danzig's my favorite Danzig band. But if we're really, really being true, I might have to say Samhain's my favorite Danzig band. They're rawer, they're heavier, they're weirder, they're darker than all the other two bands. And Samhain
sound like they were recording in a really long room with the microphones at the other end.
But that gives them that heavy, dark reggae vibe. So we're going to, for the mere point that it is Samhain, when you hear this, we're going to play a Samhain tune. This is a tune by Samhain. It's one of their last songs, one of their weirdest songs, and kind of one of my favorites. It's called Human Pony Girl off Samhain 3, November Coming Fire.
Yeah.
And that was Human Pony Girl by Samhain off November Coming Fire. Boys, we did it. We finally made a podcast that wasn't an hour and 75 minutes long.
And Adam made it.
I mean, maybe. I say that saying, like, I may before the end of this sentence die. So if I die, you know, you can send your condolences to podcast@punknews.org. That's how you can write us if you want to write us anything. And I guess that is that. That's all we got, right?
You should also send us $5 along with your condolences.
Oh, yeah. Yes. I mean, of course, like condolences aren't accepted for free.
Hey, maybe
thank you, Greg. I know we've been sending you some bad tapes lately.
If you want to send us $5, we'll definitely give...
I broke your flow. Sorry, dude.
No. What I'm thinking is that, you've enhanced my throw. Because if you send us $5, we will give at least $1.75 to podcast producer Greg Simpson. And then we will use the rest probably for food. So
I think we should take all the Punk News memorabilia and film a documentary 40 days from now. We're going to burn all the Punk News memorabilia and make a big statement.
We have $6. That's right. Six American dollars worth of memorabilia we're going to burn.
We burn $6.
Oh, that wouldn't be a very big pile. I don't even know how much memorabilia for Punk News there is
Each staffer will put a stone into a hat, and whoever's drawn out will self-immolate. It'll be excellent. It'll be the social event of the season.
We're like, all right, everybody, we're going to burn our $6, and we go to like squirt lighter fluid on it, and it blows away. We'll see you next week, podcast@punknews.org.